Καλησπέρα σας, σε μία δύσκολη μέρα για την Ελλάδα. Ναι. Σε μία δύσκολη μέρα για την Ελλάδα, ευχαριστούμε πολύ που μαζευτήκατε εδώ για να συζητήσουμε για κάτι που είναι και θα είναι επιτακτικά πολύ σημαντικό τα επόμενα χρόνια, τις επενδύσεις και τους νέους ανθρώπους. Ξέρουμε πολύ καλά ότι η κρίση στην Ελλάδα δεν θα περάσει παρά μόνο όταν δούμε τους δείχτες της ανεργίας να αλλάζουν. Γι' αυτό θεωρούμε ότι είναι πάρα πολύ σημαντικό να ακούσουμε τις γνώμες και την συνεισφορά Ελλήνων που έχουν προοδεύσει στην Αμερική, να μας πούνε τις δικές τους εμπειρίες και να δεχτούν ερωτήσεις από ελληνικές startups που πέτυχαν και προσπαθούν να πετύχουν περισσότερα στη χώρα μας και στο εξωτερικό. Θα ήθελα να δώσω αμέσως το λόγο στους ομιλητές μας και θα γίνει η συζήτηση στα αγγλικά. So we start with our speakers. This evening, it's Mr. John Kalamos, founder, chairman, CEO of the Global of the Kalamos Investments. We would like your comment first on what do you think of the current crisis and how this is affecting the Greek entrepreneurship.
What the current environment?
Yes, the current environment.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I will have to speak in English, but we're cautious about what might happen here. It's good to be at the conference and see the enthusiasm here at this level. It's quite exciting, especially from coming in from America here, and we see the excitement and the innovation and everything that could be happening here. It's really important. We need to remember, and this is all about venture capital. What's going? Capital goes to where it's treated best, and we have to have the framework for which that can happen. So we have to remember. With all the unemployment here, we have to remember that growth comes from small businesses. Even in America, most of the job growth comes from small businesses. And so whatever environment that we can create to create small businesses and create that, and that's the innovation. And that's what we're seeing here today and yesterday is a lot of innovation. And we have to remember that innovation to really have that continue, we need to be inspired by that because it creates jobs and they have to be rewarded. And that creates wealth. And then we can't forget that if we can do that, that a rising tide raises all boats, and we have to remember that that's what it's all about. It increases productivity, it increases jobs, it increases wealth for everyone. So we're excited to be here and talk more about it.
We would like also to welcome Mr. Dimitropoulos, who is the chairman and CEO of Metropolis Company. We would also like your comment on the current situation and what do you think of Greek businesses?
Thank you. That's a very complicated question. I've been asking a lot of very successful Greeks for their opinion on that subject as well, and it's very difficult to understand the answers. I certainly don't have it. I agree with John that, number one, there's a spirit in Greece that has got a lot of energy. We have a highly educated population, a lot of energy. It's a shame not to be capitalizing on that. The economy around the world is very, very expansive at the moment, and it's a shame to see Greece not participating. I'm not sure I know what the answers are. You need political leadership. We have so many attributes as a country, and I'm going to talk about that a little more in my talk a little later, but there's so many attributes as a country. We need to seed them just like you seed venture capital ideas, and we got to provide an environment where those flourish. There is a lot of opportunity for growth. I see the Greek spirit. I'm very proud of it. I'm very much part of it. I felt it when I had nothing initially, and today I'm very fortunate to be able to be here before you and express an opinion. But I wish I had the answers of how to transition Greece into a capital-friendly, into a participating country in the global economy. It all starts with a predictable political system. It starts with a legal system that you can rely on for execution, balances, solutions, as well as being and opportunities, as well as being just. But at the same time, the system here is too cumbersome. The regulations are too cumbersome. It's very difficult to get an answer and invest your capital and plan to direct that capital in a way that allows you to be transformative and to achieve the objectives of the capital. Capital is very friendly around the world. It looks for risk. It's intended to, capital intends to tailor itself to taking on risk. But it requires a more predictable environment in which you can execute and assume that risk, because once you assume it, you want to manage it through the legal system, manage through restructuring your business without a lot of regulations. And I'm not sure how to change that in Greece. I mean, I certainly rely on a lot of bright people here in Greece to have that answer better than I do, and I really don't. I don't have the answer. I know what has to be done to provide a much more friendly environment for capital and risk, but I wish I had the answer. But at the same time, we have a lot of brilliant, brilliant people in Greece that somehow they have to come together and help their government figure those answers out. So I'm sorry. I wish I had an easier response for you, but I do not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Although it will be very helpful for us to know what was the environment that helped you flourish in the United States, but I'm sure you will answer that later with the questions we'll have from the startuppers.
So save that question. And
yes,
I'll address
yes,
it.
That's the most important. We're not expecting you to solve the political situation. Okay, Mr. John Koudounis is the president and chief executive officer of Mizuho Securities USA. Can we also have your comment on what do you think of the situation now and what do you think of the growth of small businesses?
Sure. Ευχαριστώ, Sophia. Thank you very much for everybody for being here and having me on this panel. I really appreciate it. The last couple of days that we've been in Greece has been very interesting. First, let's talk about what's happening. Everybody knows that we're day-to-day listening to the news. It's a very difficult time. And the problem that I have with all the measures that are coming out and the austerities is that there's a lot of cutbacks, raising taxes, pushing back the pensions and everything. But there's no talk of real economic stimulus, which is very, very concerning. So they may get through this hurdle, but what's going to happen in the future? Having said that, the last couple of days has been a great experience in the fact that we were part of this Hellenic initiative. We saw these venture groups coming in and some of the younger generation putting up their ideas, which were really fantastic. And to the extent that we could help fund them and feed them a little bit, at least there's some good positive going on, things that are going on. Another thing, just walking through the hallways and coming to the event today, which has been extremely well attended. Everybody's coming up to me and telling me about different ideas that they have, different ventures that they have, situations. And one way you're sitting there and looking at the people and saying, wow, there's a lot of need here and there's a lot of capital that is needed. And the other way, I really, really appreciated that fire in everybody's belly, that they were able to still have the spirit to look, to try, and to make something of their companies, of themselves, and whatnot. And so that was really, 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 felt really good. And I think that that's what we need to get us through this. And, you know, mentoring the next generation is the name of this panel. And for the next generation, the advice I can give is, like, you got to keep the spirit up. You got to believe in what you're doing, especially the product that you're pushing. And even though Greece is having a very difficult time, the world is very global right now. I've had the fortunate opportunity to work for one of the largest U.S. companies, investment banking companies, one of the largest European companies, and now one of the largest Japanese companies. And every day, it's truly global. So if you keep fighting and you have a great idea and a belief in with the product that you're pushing, you will be able to reach past Greece and the issues and become successful. So everybody keep their heads up, and whatever we can do to mentor, to help, I have a passion for Greece, being that I am Greek, my family's from Sparta, and we want this to work. We want this to succeed. It has not been easy, but we're not people in a culture to give up. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to Mr. Dennis Mihail, Chairman and CEO of 4M Investments, to hear your views on the current situation first as an opening comment.
Turn this on. Thank you, Sophia. Are the acoustics okay? Can you hear me and understand me out there? Oh, thank you. I'll just make a couple of remarks, and we've heard a little bit from my colleagues, so I don't want to be repetitive. We have an expression in politics in the U.S. called, and it's never waste a crisis. I'm in the United States. I do not pretend to be intimately familiar with all of the issues in the Greek economy. I can only see it, you know, from 30,000 feet on a macro basis. But what Mr. Mitropoulos said is that if everybody understands the framework and the rules exist, whatever they are, and are generally applied equally. The United States is not exempt from corruption. It's not exempt from incompetence. It's not exempt from undue influence. I'm not saying it's perfect. But generally speaking, we have a framework that people understand and can rely on with respect to our legal system and how our economy works. What I've experienced in my discussions here over the last few days, at least with business people, is a question whether that's not what a lot of people believe is the case today in Greece. So at the top, I would say that the Greek people have to use this crisis to make fundamental change in how the economy works in Greece, and to do so with reforms that promote fairness and all the different sectors of society being treated fairly and relatively equally, so that if you do make investment, if you take risk, if you put yourself at risk and you're out there, you know with some reasonable degree of assurance that you understand the framework that you're operating in, and someone is not going to be able to simply subvert you, if I can put it that way. When it comes to entrepreneurial spirit and what should people trying to start a business, what's that like? I mean, I guess all of us up here have started businesses. First of all, it seems to me that if we were to ask ourselves what culture on the planet is the most entrepreneurial going back eons, we would say the Greek culture, the Greek history. We are, in fact, entrepreneurs in spirit, in culture. It's who we are. If you have an idea, as John says, a startup is somebody has identified a need or has developed a process or a product or something that is being done differently today than they want to do it, and the way they want to do it is adding value. So either you're creating a new product or a new industry, or you see the existing whatever's currently happening in your area of interest, in your industry, and you have ways to innovate that, which add value. The only thing I would say to you is every entrepreneur, every startup is up against huge challenges, huge risk. Everybody you talk to will let you know how you might lose. Forget about that. If you have a vision of where you're going, then stay focused and meet those challenges, have the confidence. But somehow the society here needs to make some fundamental changes so that your ideas, your effort, the risk that you take has a reasonable chance to be rewarded with success. No easy answers.
Uh, Thank you very much. I would like to ask Mr. Kalamos, you said in your speech that growth comes from small businesses. Is there any specific field that you think Greek businesses can flourish?
I think yes. I mean, it's not only in America, but here, small businesses. And we're, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing the creativity, the innovation. How do we make sure that there's the right framework? So that's the responsibility of government, is to give the business the right framework to succeed. And I think that's what has to happen here in Greece, because what I've been hearing is there's a brain drain. The innovation, the highly educated kids, everybody's a kid now, I'm older, but they're leaving. So the government has to provide a framework where it encourages the innovation and encourages businesses. This kind of reminds me of back in the early 1980s in the United States, a very critical problem. We came out of a hyperinflation period, and the banks were all broken, were not loaning money. So what did they do? Well, what happened then is the capital markets created high-yield bonds, convertible bonds. They started loaning money to medium-sized businesses there. And what did the government do to help? They lowered taxes. They encouraged businesses to grow. And at the same time, the government was spending more money than it did before. They increased their military spending a great deal. But GDP went up, so the revenue side went up at almost the same rate. So throughout the 80s, after that period, they had 6% GDP growth. And so the government's responsibility here is to create the framework of that creativity. I was here 3 or 4 years ago. I think we presented a good idea. Everybody talks about corruption. There's too much corruption going on. The corruption will, you can eliminate the corruption if people feel the tax is fair. And what our panel then said is, why don't you just do a flat tax, a fair flat tax? Nobody's trying to avoid it, but if you don't think it's fair, you do it. So if you had a fair flat tax, that would encourage the business. It's not just trying to grab money from this person versus this person. And I still think that worked very, very well in Poland. It works very well. I wish they had in the United States, but I think for Greece, that would be a terrific idea, and it would eliminate a lot of the corruption, and they'd probably end up with more revenue than they do now.
Thank you very much, and very interesting comment on the tax evasion. So Mr. Mitropoulos is expecting my answer. What was the framework that helped you flourish in the United States?
Energy, first of all. You know, you have to have energy and a desire to succeed and take risk.
That's on a personal level. Okay.
Of course. But as I think it's been said here, it's very important to understand the framework within which you operate. If you understand the rules of the game, political or otherwise, and it allows you then to express yourself and go after the opportunity. The U.S. is, again, a different model. With all respect, John, when the U.S. has had some problems, it also had the ability to print dollars, whereas I don't think Greece can print euros. And so they can get out of some crises with that method. But Greece does have all those attributes. And coming back to my own story, which I'd like to say for a little later, first of all, for me, I love engaging with business. Capital has always been available to me because the first part of my experience turned into something very successful that people appreciated. So capital has always been available. We've invested $30, $40 billion. But the rules between Europe, Mexico, Canada, and the U.S., so we've had some 82 businesses. And they're almost always the same story. You have a vision going into these businesses. Invariably, if they're troubled, you have a vision about how you're going to transform them. And we can talk about what that means, how you transform a business. Or if they're not broken, then you find a way to try to make them grow. And invariably, you invest in growth with a lot of innovation, new products, automation that leads you to be competitively advantaged by being more efficient. And so the model is reasonably simple. The key to it is that you operate in a predictable environment. So that if I buy our last business, we bought out of bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, there are two forms of bankruptcy in America. One is called Chapter 11, where a business continues to operate. So Chapter 11, you continue to operate, and the banks try to keep you alive. And Chapter 7 is the death bell. We bought 2 years ago a company in the death bell, Chapter 7. First of all, it started with 14 factories. We got it down to 3 after investing $150 million in automation, a lot of product innovation. But it all happens in 6 months, 3 months, 4 months. Although, η συζήτηση χρειάζεται 6 μήνες. Να το συζητάμε. So, αυτό είναι πολύ... For my personality, as well as my business model and style, execution is fast. It's all about investing in automation and innovation. It's all about running a lean, mean operation with a culture of accountability and not a lot of discussion. If you want to talk about it, find another job. If you want to execute, let's talk about what we have to execute and let's move on it very quickly. That's the environment that promotes my kind of business and my kind of investment appetite.
Thank you very much. I hope we are not printing our own currency pretty soon. So let's go and be more practical because we will have the questions of the startuppers in a while. Mr. Koudounis, you said that the world is very global. What would be your advice to young Greeks who have an idea and want to become global?
Well, first of all, the advice for people that want to be global is they have to establish a network. And networking is very, very important, and they have to reach and look at different areas from their school, from their friends, from their college, from their postgraduate degrees, and even from media now that we have, through Facebook or whatever you do, LinkedIn and whatnot is very important. Actually, this afternoon I had a few people that said that we talked through LinkedIn and stuff. So their social media is a big part of that. In order to establish a network, which is really important. You never know who knows what or who knows where. When you're in the phase of looking to establish a business and establish it in Greece, I think that the biggest thing, and I've said this many times on similar panels with these gentlemen, is confidence. Do we have confidence in what we're doing, and do we have confidence in the environment we are in? Unfortunately, the confidence in the environment we are in here in Greece is at an all-time low, and that needs to change. And when we look at, as a big institution, not only startups looking to place capital, political stability is amongst one of the main things that we look at. And that's definitely one of the things. Also, it's the competition that's in that market. If you have confidence and you join into the market, you got to look at what problems are you going to solve, who's your competition, and what's your competitive advantage. How can you do it better? Why could you do it better? Do you have a management team that understands the issues? Do you have a management team that has an advantage over the other management team? Do you have a management team on the floor, have boots on the ground that can know the people, know the culture, and operate within the environment that is given to you? And that's really important. And then be realistic in the evaluations of the companies that you're building and trying to build.
Thank you very much. We have one more question for Mr. Mihil, and then I want the startups to be ready to pose their questions. So, Mr. Mihil, you talked about reforms that have to be made in Greece. If you were, that's a difficult question, I think. If you were to choose one or two reforms that you would pick that Greece should make, what are those reforms?
Are you asking me what reforms I think are critical here in Greece? Is that the question?
Yes, the Greek government should make.
Okay. Well, I'm going to key off what Mr. Kalamos said a moment ago. He was talking about a flat tax, what number it starts. But let's talk about tax on business for a moment. Because I would add to what John said, put a fair and reasonable tax regime in place, but also put a few people in jail that didn't pay. You know, not very many. It won't take many. And the government might consider what do we call it? I'm blocking on the word where you have a you've forgiven things if you come forward, amnesty, right? I don't know how much money is buried off somewhere in the Marshall Islands or someplace that belonged in the tax coffers of the country of Greece, but there's a fair amount of money out there. So a vigorous enforcement of a fair and equitable tax regime, I think, would go a very, very long way. Now, how do you get that done if inevitably the status quo has its defenders because they are profiting from whatever the situation is? And so if they're profiting from it and they have the power or have their friends in power, they have the financial resources to press their case, the only thing that overcomes that is what I said a minute ago, and that is the body politic recognizing there's a crisis and fundamental change has to be made. But if people had a fair tax regime and knew that if they don't abide by the law, that there will in fact be a penalty, because, again, I'm not here, I'm not in business in Greece, but what I hear from almost everybody I talk to is that there is no accountability in that sense. So that would be the first and most critical thing that and then the regulatory requirements and a lot of the bureaucracy that we hear about, you know, you can chip away at those things. But that might be a wonderful first step.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you for all being so concrete and very short to your answers. So I think it's time that we now give the microphone to the start-uppers who are here in this room to pose the question to the speakers. And we will start with Absorber Gamers. Absorber is a startup company. I don't know where the CEO is. Okay, great. Here, Manos Moschus will pose a question to Mr. Mihil. Absorber Games was founded in 2012. It's a mobile and social media game. And somebody bought you 2 months ago?
Yes, actually, okay. We just acquired by an Austrian company 2 months ago.
Okay, so congratulations, and you can pose the question to Mr. Mihil.
Thank you.
I'm having a hard time where I sit hearing exactly what you're saying.
Okay, I will repeat the question if you don't hear it.
Okay. No, go ahead, use the microphone. Stay where you are.
Hello? Here? Okay, thank you very much. So my question is, how would you advise actually the Greek entrepreneurs and enterprises given the bad situation, the financial situation in Greece and the unstable situation, how would you advise the Greek entrepreneurs in order to stay in Greece or to relocate abroad in US, for example?
Mm. That was the most important question we have that as the first question.
I'm looking at the sign. It doesn't say Solomon. Right? It doesn't say Solomon. It's an intractable, difficult question that you raise. Because, you know, life is short, right? Or so it feels. Time goes by very quickly. And Greece is years into this problem. Years. So if we take a 25-year-old Greek person who's got a great idea, they want to do this and they want to get ahead, and if they emigrate, they're going into a world that they will, where they will have the opportunity to exploit their talent, their capabilities, their ideas, whatever it is. Very difficult to say to that person, well, you have to be a patriot, you have to stay home, you have to make it work here. I think the fundamental change has to begin that we've been talking about, or Greece will continue to lose talent that will go to places where it can be exploited, and the individual is going to be able to get ahead. So it's a very personal situation. It also depends, to a significant degree, on what is the business that somebody is contemplating. Greece has to export, right? You have to export, and you have to have a big tourist trade.
We are talking mostly for tech companies.
And also because we believe that's a very important question. If there's anybody else from the speakers that want to add something, it's really important for us to know your advice on that. Go ahead, Mr. Mejia.
No, I mean, I think it's applicable even in the tech world. Now, the technology would allows you to be here and do things in the global economy. I understand that. But what Mr. Kadunas said is very critical. So we have a little tech boom we're trying to do in New York City. Everybody knows about Silicon Valley. Everybody remembers what Ireland did in the maybe 30 years ago, is it? With the they focused on manufacturing computers, as I recall. So it's the requirement. You've got to have the relationships, the connectivity, and you got to have something that the world needs or thinks it needs or you convince it needs. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, you can do it from here in Greece. But it would be a lot more, it would be a lot less risky if we had the environment here that promotes entrepreneurship rather than stifles it.
Of course.
Is there anybody else who wants to add something to this very important question? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. The next question comes from eLearn Industry. Is the leading digital publisher and marketing agency, and Christopher Pappas, founder and CEO, is going to pose a question to Mr. Mitropoulos.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm the founder and CEO of eLearningIndustry.com. So you can understand that I have a great passion about education, learning technologies, and of course, entrepreneurship. My generation grew up, raised to work for the public sector. You know that. The question that I have for you is that should entrepreneurship be taught in an educational system like Greek, and how important is that? And I'm saying that because a few minutes ago you said about that the Greeks had the culture of entrepreneurship. However, I truly believe that our educational system does not support that culture. So this is my question to you.
I guess there's a contradiction between high employment with the government and entrepreneurship. So I think those two don't belong probably in the same conversation. But we are a very entrepreneurial culture, and it's, can you educate entrepreneurs? I think you can certainly. Education is very important, regardless whether you're an entrepreneur or a more institutional type of personality. You need to understand mathematics, statistics, economics, marketing. Some formal education, I think, is very important. However, entrepreneurship is an instinctive. I often tell our executives, for example, you don't overstudy something to death. I mean, I want to see as much from your instinct and your experience as much as how much you study it. For example, you talk about marketing. Big corporations all over the world, and I've had exposure to many, they'll do a new idea, new product idea. They'll do focus groups. They'll analyze it a year later. Everybody has studied it to death. In an entrepreneurial culture, you don't need to do that. You want to take a risk. You take 5-6 people, you discuss it. You might check with some consumer groups as to how relative it is, but bright people already know it when they work together, young marketing ladies or gentle guys, and you interact and you use your instincts in addition to some very fundamental basic analysis. But when analysis becomes a process of its own and it becomes analysis paralysis, then the entrepreneurship, the instinct, and the innovation is lost. So can you educate entrepreneurs? I think it's an instinct to be an entrepreneur. Can you educate business? Can you educate executives? Absolutely. But entrepreneurs that are willing to operate, not from the seat of the pants, because for myself, I like financial statements very much. I thrive on them. But I don't belabor them. I live with them. They drive my decisions and my organizational decisions. But it's all about decision making. And then if you make a mistake, God bless you. Let's adjust and move on. But that you don't teach at a university. You teach it in a culture you create in your own company, in your own. And that. Now, how do I do that in Greece? I think all of us have that entrepreneurial. Honestly, I've lived in everywhere: Geneva, Paris, Brussels, Hong Kong, and London. In America, certainly, the Greeks per capita have higher levels of entrepreneurship than anywhere I see it, anywhere, educationally. And there's so many opportunities here, financial opportunities. Look at two great firms that are private equity firms, Zeus Capital, Global Finance. I know the guys. They're very capable. Greece has not confined them. They've moved on. So there's a lot of opportunities. We're by instinct entrepreneurs. And, you know, we've been enriched by 4,000 years. We haven't been dragged down by 4,000 years. It's the past years that have dragged us down to allow our spirits to... I'm sorry, I can get pretty passionate, so I apologize.
No, we love passion. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. I have to tell you that we have to restrict the questions. The startupper should only ask one. I know you've sent two, but you can should only ask one question for each speaker. So the next startup company is eSatisfaction, that creates a bridge between online businesses and online consumers. You want to add something? Oh, yes. Okay.
Let me just make one additional point that we could learn from this. I think what's happening and how I understood that question, and this is happening a lot all over the world, maybe more so in Greece, but the academic community wants to teach you what to think. When we study Greek philosophy, we learn how to think. And that's where entrepreneurship comes from. That's where innovation comes from. So go back to studying philosophy and don't just be brainwashed in what to think. And that's, I think, really critical. And it's you could see when you've gone too far down that road, this is the result. And so I would encourage that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Education was the most important thing. Thank you very much. That was a very interesting comment. So Mr. Evagiros Kotsoni, CEO of eSatisfaction, will pose a question to Mr. Koudounis.
Hello. And first of all, I would like to thank you because you're a great source of inspiration and wisdom for us. I'll be fast. One of the things that we would like to know is that we've been passing through a lot of ups and downs lately. So, closer. I'd like to ask you, because we have passed through points of, let's say, great disappointments, both as citizens or as entrepreneurs or as, you know, people doing business. And I was curious if successful and, you know, self-made, you know, successful persons like you have ever had ever such moments of big disappointments and how you dealt with them and what would you advise us? What did you learn from all these, you know, moments of, you know, of the downs that you have passed?
It's because we're facing a lot of disappointments these days. That's why. Thank you for the question.
Well, As it pertains to business, I think that everybody has ups and downs, and you know, very few people are lucky enough, like my colleagues here, to go straight up all the time. But what you understand, you have to understand whether you know, you're working for a big corporation or a startup or whatnot. You have to have passion. That's one thing that Greeks do not lack, of what you're doing and your belief in the product or what you have. And at the end of the day, you keep pushing through. There's going to be other intangibles that you cannot control. And you have, as long as you stay the course and you believe in what you do and you believe in yourself and you're doing the right things, and you could, I always try to look myself in the mirror and put myself in the other person's seat. And when you're negotiating a deal or whatnot, you know, some cultures like to take every penny off the table. I feel that people must prosper and you live the next day in order to continue to do business. So when the chips are down, if you carry yourself in a way where you persevere, you're steadfast, and you keep pushing, and you believe in the product, it will persevere, no matter what the circumstances are. And fortunately enough, because we live in a society where we are truly global, if there are obstacles in your way in Greece, you can look elsewhere. There's social media, there's other things where you could look for even capital outside of Greece, not necessarily here in Greece. So, it, you know, there are times where there is adversity, but you have to take that and look forward and use that and keep going. And if you have, you have to be realistic about what you're chasing, though. And, you know, people cannot all be rock stars if that's what they want, because they may not have a great voice. But they need to be realistic of what they're doing and just keep pushing forward, and it will happen. And you have to believe in yourself that it will. And get help and a good team of management around you. Because in a lot, depending on what you are, you can't do it all yourself. And I found as leading large organizations, it's very important to be able to have people that can help you and give them the autonomy to be able to do that. Because if one person, as you grow in a business and a firm, you need to have people that are experts. And one of the other things that I found that's worked for me is don't be afraid to hire people that you feel are better or smarter than you. Because you can only get better as a person, as a firm, and getting to the project and the end of the goal that you're trying to achieve.
Thank you.
Excellent. Very good advice. The next question is from Mr. Pericles Venieris, Chairman and CEO of Green Cola, Greek Cola Company that was established in 2011 and it operates in the beverage industry.
Hello, gentlemen.
And the question is for Mr. Mitropoulos.
Yes. I'm actually the CFO. I'm on behalf of our CEO here. The question is the following. The act of investing is a risky approach. Is a successful investment the result of good forecast about the market opportunity? Or does it come from your experience in a specific industry? Would you invest in a business with growing potentials that you are not familiar with?
Thank you, John. That's something of all. I guess my early part of my career was in electronics, technology, telecommunications, and then we moved into acquisitions. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, out of these many companies, many of them are in the consumer sector. And we've developed a reputation, so if there's a consumer deal anywhere in the world, we'll be called through the investment bankers mostly. So we developed some expertise, and it makes it easier to execute those. We've done quite a few industrial deals, like we bought a business from Vivendi in France a few years ago, and they've done well. But, you know, you have to have a feeling going in that you understand the business and where you want to take it. Without a clear vision by the senior person, the organization doesn't have a clear vision. If you go into an opportunity with a clear vision of where you want to go, if you can't have that clear vision, don't go in. It's not your opportunity. But if you have a clear vision of where you want to take the business and then you articulate that clear vision to your group of management, and you inspire them with the idea that, hey, we got to go there. And everybody, and you discuss it first, but you have to have a clear vision. And when everybody understands that's where you got to go, it's magic. It's the energy is magical. And, you know, you measure performance. You measure right along how the performance is. And you might pat back, or you might say, wait a sec, that's the wrong direction. But you got to start with a clear vision. You have to be willing to invest behind that vision. And the organization has to be one that matches your culture. Invariably, I must tell you, when we buy businesses, I would tell you, in a big part of the cases, we terminate the top three or four people because they take too much time to explain to you why your vision is not the right one and why it should go there. You want to listen. But the reason you buy a company and you spend hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, is because you have a conviction of where you want to take it. If you don't have that conviction, don't buy it. But if you have that conviction, yes, get consensus, build energy and a desire and a commitment to go for it, and then you got to drive it. So that's how we assess opportunities, whether in the consumer sector or any other business. If I don't have the conviction, I don't have the understanding of where I want to take it and how we're going to take it there, and not only me, by the way, other folks that I work with, I wouldn't do it. But generally, I'm more comfortable with basic businesses because that's how I've grown up. Consumer, industrial. I won't easily do pharmaceuticals. I don't know enough about them. I won't do necessarily high tech. I use high tech, but I don't know enough about it. But I stay close to what I know and understand, and we've had success with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Manolis Koudelis, co-founder of Iatria Online, a platform that brings doctors and patients on a video call. They bring this together. And the question is for Mr. Kalamos.
Exactly. Hello. I'd like to ask, what do you think is the best way for a startup company to internationalize its operations and offer its products and services abroad? And when is the right time to do that?
So, if I understand the question, is how to internationalize the business?
Exactly.
Well, I think the first thing, especially when we're talking about startups here, is make sure you're successful where you're at today before you spread too thin out there. And so, what you want is to be successful in your current environment and then be able to leverage that in other areas because. As you go away from that basic, it gets more and more difficult to do that. But I wouldn't discourage that at all. We're in a very global world today, and internationalizing the business makes a lot of sense. But I would make sure that you're comfortable, you're profitable where you're at, and then you take it to the different levels. And the other thing I would add is that I've always looked at the business, it may be internationalizing a business is the same thing. A business is like riding a bicycle uphill. As soon as you stop pedaling, you're going the wrong way. And so a lot of people, when I think this is great, I can coast. Well, you're coasting downhill. So you have to be adapting the business to a very changing world. And the world's changing dramatically, especially in your business, the technology area. New technology, that's a terrific theme, but it's very innovative. It's changing all the time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dennis. The next question is from a very promising field in Greece, energy. Vasilis Soulio, CEO and co-founder of Nekova Energy Solution, is going to pose a question to Mr. Mehil.
Hi. Welcome in Greece. Let us assume that you invest in a startupper. How would you help the startupper in order to scale up his business?
How would I what? Shape the company?
How would you help?
How would I help?
Yes.
Well, when I'm a passive, well, I guess I'm never passive, but when I'm an investor as opposed to the operator, mostly what I do is write checks, okay? But, and small ones, small checks.
That's good.
The assistance that I've tried to provide to a number of startup companies in the United States in which I have invested and continue to invest is what you're hearing on this panel, fundamental blocking and tackling of business, bringing the rules of the road that we know intuitively from decades of work and trying to inculcate those lessons into a startup venture where they may have a wonderful vision about a product or a service, but you know everybody's kind of new, and you want to make sure that that fundamental business practices that are engaged in are in place. That's generally what I've been able to provide, because if I invest in a company that's trying to cure cancer through immune therapy, as Dean said, I have to be a small part of that because I don't know enough about that world. So if I'm confident in the people, if I believe in the people that are prosecuting the plan, and I'm providing capital, I can sit on an executive committee. We can, again, make sure that the business practices are appropriate. That's kind of the role that we play. When I buy a business that I'm going to operate, it's very, very different. Very different. I'll make one comment that I was triggered by what I heard Dean say a minute ago about replacing top management. I once purchased the largest food service disposables company in North America. It was called Sweetheart Cup. And the top management was sitting in rooms planning what they were going to do 5 years from now. But McDonald's wasn't getting their cups on time. Seriously. The deliveries were failing. It was a mess while these guys were sitting around talking about it. I changed four people in a company of 8,000. And in 24 months, the profit tripled, right? With, by the way, very little growth. I mean, they already had $1 billion in revenue. I wandered off the subject, and I apologize. But that triggered me, and I wanted to make that point.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
We have two more questions from two startuppers. Mr. George Spanouzakis, CEO of Piñata, the world's first interactive and visual messaging platform, will pose a question to Mr. Kalamos.
Hello, thank you for being here today and sharing with us all those great insights and experiences. So, Mr. Kalamos, if we go back in time, just after the very first big success you made, what was your fear back then and how you managed to overcome it?
Go back a long time now. So, I think one of the, initially, since I mortgaged my house to start the business do that, I think I didn't have a great fear going on. What I really wanted to do was manage it as best I possibly could. As I looked at the business, it was all about doing a good job for the customer, for the client. So my focus was, how do I really do a good job for the client? So if there was a fear there, how would I fail the client? And so the focus was not on the bottom line. It wasn't on that. It's really, how do I really do a good job for the clients there? And I've told people the business, everything is a byproduct of doing that. You do a good job for the client, and then that's a byproduct. So the fear would be that I didn't do a good job for the client. That's.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And a last question from a startup company that is from the tourist industry. TripInView, Achilles Hadjinikos, co-founder and CEO of TripInView, will pose a question to Mr. Koudounis.
Hello. The question is, do you accept questions from 63-year-old technology startup founders?
Absolutely.
Okay. That is the Jurassic Park of technology will pose a question.
Well, I think there was a new Jurassic Park movie that did quite well that just came out last week. There's hope.
My question is the following. Since a startup has no past data, historic data, profits, and things like this, what is the fair method to define a fair valuation for a startup company in order to invest to one of those?
That's a good question, and one that I'm actually not an expert on, but I could only opine a little bit about it. Number one, I think there are people that can evaluate what your competition is. If this is something that is absolutely unique to the industry and there's no comparables out there, it's going to be very difficult. But you could also, you always find an arena in which the business is somewhat linked to. So bankers will come in and evaluate through multiples and whatnot what they feel that the company is worth given other comparables in that industry. Now, if it's something that is extremely, extremely, it has a foresight and it hasn't been created yet, it's tough to tell. And that's why you see these evaluations of companies that go through the moon, because it's such a huge breakthrough. And it's actually a very good problem to have if you could be able to come up with a product, the new Facebook, you know, the new Apple computers and stuff. That, you know, that'd be fantastic, and it'd be a great problem because we've all evaluated it way too low. But there's always other companies or other industries that trade in a similar way, and you could evaluate that. Now, obviously, there's sometimes the management feels evaluation's worth X, and outside people feel it's worth a different number. But if everybody does their homework and their research very, very closely, they can get closer to that number.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are done. We have two more minutes in case one of the speakers wants to add something to the questions posed before.
I'd make a follow-on comment to Mr. Kalamos's answer about what was frightening. My view is that true entrepreneurs have a screw loose in their head. No, seriously. And don't feel the fear. That's why if you go and talk to everybody about your plan, they're going to tell you what's wrong with it. They're going to tell you why it's going to fail, what the challenges are, what all the difficulties are. Because the average human being is a little bit risk averse. The true entrepreneur, once you have that vision in your head that Mr. Metropoulos talked about, the picture of what it's going to be like, and you're driving toward that, there is no fear. There really isn't. And if, by the way, if you're afraid of it, it's probably a mistake.
Anybody else wants to add something?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you all. The distinguished speakers and the startups, thank you all.